freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so obvious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it. And unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you got it.
Rest, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given right, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
And the
hello,
crowd
hello.
Goes wild.
Hello, hello.
Yes. They can't wait for another Tuesday night.
Another Tuesday night.
The blood gunfight.
Blood gunfight. So, in memoriam tonight, Gilbert Gottfried.
That's bummed. Really balmy.
I was really bummed. Yeah, so I was a fan. I know some people aren't, but I always thought he was hysterical.
Yeah.
And not just as Iago, the parent.
Yeah, it's right.
Or the Aflac duck, which he got fired for.
When did he get fired for that?
Oh, he made some comment about something or other.
That's usually what comedians do.
Yeah, well.
And sometimes it's just not as funny as you think.
When you're the duck that says Affleck, you don't want to make anyone look bad. So, yeah, got fired. one of the things I saw mentioned was a time he did the entire, he repeated, Ice-T's entire, set of jokes, like verbatim, right after Ice-T did at Hugh Hefner's roast.
Oh, yeah.
So that's pretty funny. Just that kind of thing. Like, just, you know, next level type stuff, not just like jokes, but, you know.
He said, you know those flashbulb moments? He's like,
I remember that.
You remember that one?
Yeah.
I was at a party. And I went up to Jackie Onassis and I just
you remember
asked
where you were and what you were doing.
Yeah.
So inappropriate, so wrong. Oh boy, would you get slapped for that in 2022?
Exactly. Yep. And what movie was that? And he was like, he's like, what can I put in this hand over here to make you forget what's over here?
Oh, what was that?
Wasn't that like, I don't know. I keep coming back to Lethal Weapon, one of the Lethal Weapon movies, but I'm not sure.
Was it? Like a later Lethal Weapon?
Yeah, Lethal Weapon 3 or something.
Yeah, that might be. It was something, it wasn't like a comedy. Or, yeah. You know, it was, Lethal Weapons are comedic in their way, right? So, they have their comic relief, but it, you know, it wasn't a straight comedy.
Right.
Yeah, he was definitely, I don't know, it was a different time, right? Comedy was all about breaking lines down. What is comedy about these days?
It's not about the funny, that's for sure.
Well, so it's funny to, I'm trying to be understanding. To me, Breaking the Taboo is funny. If it's done artfully so, right?
Right.
But, like, if it's just stupidly done, then that's just stupid. But, I mean, I think people who can know comedy can tell the difference. You know, they're not just going for the cheap laugh.
It's kind of like pornography, right? I mean, like.
Right. You'll know when you see it, right?
You know when you see it, yeah.
Right. Yeah, and modern comedy. I mean, sometimes they do kind of like push the edge a little bit. Did you watch Saturday Night Live like 2 weeks ago?
I didn't. I don't know. I know what sketch you're talking about.
The Will Smith one.
No, I didn't see that.
So it's there's a black actor on the show, Chris Redd. He's playing Will Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And a fan comes up to him and wants to do a photo, and it's right in the middle of his little like tirade. And he said, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I'll take a selfie with you." He takes a selfie and then said, "Oh, just one sec." And he says, and then just immediately goes into, "Keep your wife, my wife's name out of your effing mouth." And then he's acting like everything's fine and wants to take photos. And it was really funny. And the guy who wants me to take a photo is like shocked. He's like, Oh, actually, no, what happened was he's like, let me take a selfie with you. And he says, be right back. And he gets up. Nice. You don't see him hit anybody. And then you hear the crowd reaction. And then he comes back and talks to everyone to do a selfie. And then nice. He keeps talking to the guy. Hey, yeah, we do this, that. And then would interrupt by saying, keep my wife's name out of your effing mouth. My wife's name out of your effing mouth. Yeah. So that's kind of, you know, that's kind of edgy humor.
Did you see the Bill Maher take on it?
No, I didn't.
He did the grassy knoll, the Gebruder, what is that? The Gebruder film.
Yeah.
I can't. Oh yeah, I messed you up.
Magruder, it's a Saturday Night Live. It's
a yeah,
Bruder.
Not Magruder.
It's a
Bruder. Yeah.
It's a Bruder. Yeah. Double check that, but it's just came in my head. Yeah, Abraham Zapruder film, but well, no, what did he say?
And he was just like, here's Will Smith. Here's when the joke is coming, and look, he smiles, and his head goes back to the left as he laughs. You know, and he's like, and he doesn't.
So it's
realize.
A JFK moment, though, back into the left, back into the left.
Yeah, exactly. He just kept saying
that's
that.
Funny.
Back to the left. You know, and he doesn't. The smile doesn't leave his face until he realizes. From Jada, that it wasn't funny.
So was Bill's take wasn't funny?
Oh, no, no. It was a joke. Yeah, he defended all, you know, comedians, you know. He defended Roseanne Barr, which, you know, he's friends with, but he thinks he's crazy. And, you know, he just, the friends, you know, he defended all comedy.
I mean, so just for a few things. One, I think we talked about this last week. Does everybody in the world know that she had alopecia? Like, that's some deep cut knowledge. Two, is it that tough of a jab?
Right.
Like, is it, like, he's equating her to look like Demi Moore.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what, right.
What? You look like Demi Moore in that movie where she also cut her hair off. That's your hard swing. That's your, oh my God, I've been cut down.
You know, I'm pretty sure that if I was friends with somebody that had that condition and was a female, you know, I try to, like, you know.
Well, I mean, like,
put it in perspective by saying that joke. I'd probably deliver that joke.
If someone threw at you, well, I'm losing my hair, so it wouldn't work with you, but it work. If someone threw at me, losing my hair, and I cut it off, I go, boom. And someone says, oh, he's trying to pull off a rock look.
Yeah.
I'm not really heartbroken at that one. Like, I'll pat and baldness. I can't believe you drew attention to my bald head. Like, likening me to The Rock wouldn't really, like, that's not my tough shot that day.
Right.
So yeah, it's saying she looked like another woman who, you know, in that film was in good shape. And yeah, so, like, what's the shot? Like, if he said she looked like Telly Savalas, which nobody would get because.
Right.
It's out of date, or I don't know. Is there.
If she, right.
Wait, so who's a shot you could take if somebody's completely bald?
Man, hard to say. I'm maybe not thinking of them, but I can't think of anybody that would be a cut.
Yeah, well, I'm just like you'd have to liken it to somebody. It would be like it would be a shot. Like if there was someone bald who, like Harvey Weinstein was bald, and you said I was one of the Harvey Weinstein look, or I don't know. I don't know anybody who's bald. But if that was the attack, likening it to that person, I can see it. I just don't see it. I don't see why it was so bad. For all the other stuff that was said earlier about their marriage.
Right.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, well, the other piece of for me is that, like, you know, if someone's saying that, it's kind of like it's not like laughing at you. It's more like, you know, laughing with you.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, if someone likened me to The Rock, because I cut off all my hair, I'm not heartbroken. Oh my gosh, they said I look like The Rock.
I'll give you one. A friend of mine who's bald. It was a meeting at Walmart, and it was an employee meeting, and there was a good 300 people there, and one of my close friends, he was what, working the crowd, what's that called?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I know what you
spritzing
mean.
Spritzing the crowd.
Yeah, there you go, right.
He was spritzing the crowd, and he said to my friend, he's like, oh, and we have, oh my gosh, Mr. Warmth.
Mr. Clean.
No. The comedian, the comedian, Mr., they called him Mr. Warmth. He was always, Don Rickles.
Oh, yeah, Don Rickles.
He's like, oh, Don Rickles is here, you know, stand up, you know, and he stood up, and it was like, he laughed, and everybody laughed.
Right, well, it's funny. Like, so there you go. So Don Rickles, he's not handsome. He's not, like, some Adonis or anything like that. Was your friend ready to punch the guy?
No.
Because it's funny, because what Don Rickles went for was his wit.
Yes.
He's fast. He's funny. Don Rickles is here. Actually, Mr. Clean, I guess, is kind of a shock because he's a cartoon character, but you're just saying the guy's bald.
Right.
They're a bald cartoon character. Again, like, not cutting me to the core.
Right.
Yeah, I don't get it. Like, the whole thing, I'm wondering if, I don't know if, like, they're saying, obviously it wasn't staged, but if he was uncomfortable about all the other stuff coming out about his relationship, is this a way to detract from that?
Right. He stood up and defended his wife.
Well, they're not talking about the fact there's other women, men sleeping with. Which I find awkward.
Now, is that something that, like, they're proud about? That's something that they strive for?
Well, they're open about it.
They're open about it. They're open about their open marriage.
They're open about their open marriage.
And they're both in doing it. They're both like,
yeah,
participating.
I guess. I don't know how that breaks, how that cookie crumbles, or however it's put in modern parlance. I guess they're both apparently on board with the idea. Or at least so they've said on their entirely too open podcast, if you ask me. Why not keep that to yourself?
Right. Right.
Like, even if you feel it's nothing to be ashamed of, okay. Most people have relations with their spouse and they don't feel that they're necessarily ashamed of it. Doesn't mean they talk about it.
No. I mean, unless they typically
urinate and defecate in privacy. Like, we don't need to discuss it.
No. No, you don't.
Not likening your engagement to defecation, but my main point is that you can have a public persona where only so much is discussed, and a private life where you are, more open with who you are. I don't need to know that Will Smith has an open marriage to enjoy him in Independence Day. That's right. Not important.
No.
For the background of Welcome to Earth. Speaking of Welcome to Earth, I just want to say welcome to Revolution Radio. A lot of ways to support Revolution Radio. You can donate at revolution.radio/donations.html. Patreon.com/Revolution Radio. Donorbox.org/Revolution-Radio. And the Zazzle Store at Zazzle.com/store/Rev Radio. But yeah, it's not important. Go about your business, I say.
In fact, I tend to like actors less when I know
the more you know.
The more I know, yeah.
Well, I mean, and I think that's true of most people. Like, you find out about, you know, Johnny Depp. People found out about Johnny Depp and his, you know, tumultuous relationship with his wife, and they both have abuse claims against one another. He's canceled. Do we really want to know? I think we all want to have like a perfect image of everybody out there. Obviously nobody can live up to perfection.
We all fall short.
Yeah, is that, it's like a little game of chicken. How perfect can you appear in public? Because that's, so what I think that what I blame it on, I blame it on the social media. Social media encourages so much disclosure, and the people that I think are the best at it are fake. They're absolutely creating images that don't exist.
You know, I mean, I know people, I'm me too, that like, you know their life, and then you see the life that they post on Facebook.
Right.
You know, that you know, everything's bliss, and the center of their world is their what like their child. That's the center of their world, and everything they live and breathe for that very moment for that child, and then you like you know that like, you know, the child probably lives, you know, 10 hours away, you know.
Yeah, right.
They never see him, you know.
Yeah, sure.
It's like, I mean, isn't that sad? It's like, who are you fooling? Yourself? Or is this the life? Well, what is that?
When you can make money at it, it becomes, I think, a job being this character. So you become an actor in every facet of your life. And when you're an actor in every facet of your life, I think things certainly will wear away at you. And when I hear about their disclosure on that, I don't think it's as open. I don't think it's a therapy session that they're talking about. I think they're talking about things, but always trying to spin it. And I think the proof of that is the fact that he walked up and smacked somebody. Obviously, there's underlying stress there.
Yeah, right.
We talked about other ways he can handle it. He didn't walk up and make a joke, put his arm around her shoulder, say, look, she's got alopecia, munch, and knock it off.
Right. Maybe he didn't know, you know. She didn't want to come out right now, by the way.
Right. He could have said it like that. Could have made a joke. Could have made another joke.
Right. We both can be Aladdin now in the next.
We both can be. He could have come up and he said, you know, there's going to be a memoriam. Paul Mooney's going to be here. Shame there's no Great Black on this anymore. I think that would have been funny. There's your comeback, right? there will. There's five. I'll bill you $5. You can use that next time you're in that situation. Or Chris Rock's making fun of Jada. So I don't think they'll be friends again. I don't think they were real friends before, because I don't think real friends would have handled that situation the way they did. But yeah, in the end, it just goes to show how comedy has gone from Don Rickles to your earlier thing, who said amazing things, like amazingly, like confrontational push button things.
He was making fun of, Emmanuel Lewis's height.
Emmanuel Lewis's height. Morgan Freeman was at something, and he said he looked at him and said, "Wow, they let you people up front." And it's right. The modern thing is like that's problematic. He'd be canceled for saying that,
right?
And I don't know how black people feel about that, but the he was mocking the way I see it. He was mocking the circumstances itself. I don't think he was saying Morgan Freeman shouldn't be where he was. Morgan Freeman laughed and clapped him on the shoulder, and Don Rickles laughed too. So I don't think he was, joking in a way, but not joking. I think he was actually joking. I think that level of humor is lost. I think everything is seen as just threat and insult. It's a dumber world we live in. If something can be interpreted as threatening, it is threatening.
I think you can still, do. You know, Phyllis Diller and Rodney Dangerfield. I think they can still.
No, I don't think they can.
Really?
I don't think they can. Caddyshack has seen his problematic. Yeah. So my favorite line in Caddyshack, he goes in with his Chinese friend. Yeah. They walk in the front door and said, "Hey Yang, I think this is one of those restricted clubs. Don't tell them you're Jewish."
Yeah.
That's funny. The Yang part's a giveaway. The guy's Chinese, so obviously they would be thinking that. But that's the joke. And I think from what I've read, Rodney just kind of came on set and just riffed. He wasn't like, here's your okay, we're gonna write this out. Here's your line. Here's how you're gonna deliver it. He just came on set and was just funny.
Yeah. Where he stuck his foot in his mouth. He's like making fun of the hat. He's like,
"That's something, man, you put on the dead guy or something."
He's like, "What are you gonna? We get a free bowl of soup with this hat?"
Oh, but it looks good on you though. Yeah. And then he rolled his eyes. Oh yeah, that's just, it's just funny. And I think everything. So I've been thinking about like woke comedy and like, you know, am I the one that's wrong? And no, it's the children that are wrong. Just a little Simpson throwback there.
Yep.
But yeah, so here's some of the things that I've been finding that I am grading against modern comedy. So they have to let you know the person that they're making fun of deserves it in some way, because you can't punch down. So it's got to be some sort of comeuppance. That's the only thing allowed to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
So your sketch, your joke, your whatever has to properly set up why that person deserves to be taken down a notch in some way.
Yep. Yeah.
It's exhausting to have to go through all that.
Did you see the closer? Dave Chappelle? Closer?
No, I haven't.
Dave Chappelle?
No, is that his new one?
Yeah, that's his latest one, yeah.
No, I haven't seen it.
He tells a joke where he's talking about, the need for people to be equal. He's like, men and women are equal. He's like, of course they're not equal. If they were equal, you wouldn't have the NBA and the WNBA. If women could compete in basketball like men do, they'd be in the same league, now wouldn't they? So no, obviously they're not.
That's not even a joke. That's just true.
Yeah, I know.
He made some comment on Saturday Night Live when he was hosting about the pay gap and just threw it out as is. And he was making fun of it. And a bunch of women were offended because he was punching down. And that's exactly what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think he supports the pay gap. The way they read it, he absolutely did.
Mm-hmm.
And, as a black male, he has to watch who he punches down on.
Yep.
Like, you know what reparations I'm going to give black male comedians so they can make any joke they want. That's the reparations. What a devil's bargain that would be to like black male comedians. Either you get all this money they could have had if you didn't have slavery in your history, or you can make any joke you want. 10 out of 10, they'll live in a box and make any joke. That's my guess.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, I agree. So wait, what of Elon Musk?
Oh, Elon Musk. So he's investing in Twitter, is that it?
I think he is he's the majority partnership of Twitter.
Okay, this is what I understand. Is he the largest minority stakeholder?
Oh.
Minority by minority, I mean the fewest number of stakes, obviously.
Yeah, no, I understand, yeah.
Is he that, or is he an actual majority stakeholder? Somehow I don't think that's true.
You wouldn't think that they would let that happen.
As much money as he has, I don't think he could buy that out. Twitter shareholder. Twitter's largest shareholder. We'll ask that. Five Twitter shareholders. Number one, Elon Musk, the Vanguard Group, Morgan Stanley. I don't think he's got a 51% share.
He's the largest of the minority.
Yep.
Yeah. Because he has 9.2% stake.
Yeah, my God, right, yeah. 9.2% stake. Here's what you get to do with a 9.2% stake in a company. F all. That's what you get to do. It was one of the best economics lessons I ever had. There was a Greek, I believe, shipping magnate. And he was kind of like just mismanaging the money. And they're like, well, we're your stockholders. We don't like what you're doing. He said, well, if you don't like what I'm doing, sell the stock.
Yep.
Pound sand. That what you get to do as a minority stockholder is you get to vote the shares. And if that means you can vote together with a majority, sometimes that matters. If you're in a minority, that means jack. You get nothing.
Mm-hmm.
This person with the most shares wins. And then there are fun things like non-voting shares, like Apple has. Ever wonder if you have a non-voting share in Apple? Pretty much, if you've got a share in Apple, it's a non-voting share.
That's right.
It's almost definitely a non-voting share of what you have. You own a baseball card. Because they have no plans to ever pay out the big dividends that they could be paying because they like to make money and keep it. and give you a share that you can sell on the open market.
So he can be a board member because he owns more than 5%.
He can be a board member. Yep, he sure could be.
But he has to be a what's known as a passive investor.
Uh-huh.
Which means at least these two things, that he didn't buy the shares in an attempt to change or control the company, and that he didn't buy the shares as a part of a deal to change or influence the control of the company.
Yep.
He had to make those, he had to declare that in writing to the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Before. Now, that's so he's not influencing the stock because he's a majority stockholder of Tesla. Is that right?
Right.
So the Securities Exchange Commission can get involved if they ever see any sort of way that someone's trying to influence or control markets, and they're trying to limit that. I think that's probably valuable. It's a little constrictive, but I'm certainly not a fan of people trying to manipulate stocks.
Yeah, so I don't know. I didn't read on why he doesn't want to be a board member, other than he said he didn't want to be a board member. I don't think that, you know, he wanted to change. I don't think he wanted to put a presence up there where he said anything that would, because I think if he's on the board and he goes to board meetings and he speaks, he's going to say things counter than Twitter wants him to say or feel.
Yeah, for sure.
So so he doesn't even put himself in that soup.
Well, and Twitter's odd because Twitter in one way is from the board standpoint, or from the Jack, whatever his name was probably among the leftier of the social media outlets. Like Mark Zuckerberg, I think, is just in it really just for the money. Twitter, for as much as they came under scrutiny for allowing Trump to speak, had more woke leaning rules that they decry Facebook and Instagram for not having. So I think there was more the more lefty of the major social media outlets. And I think some people were seeing Musk's presence there as influencing that. Because Musk has his anti-Musk crowd.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be, I guess, libertarian.
One of them is Robert Reich.
No fan of Elon Musk. Robert Reich.
No, he's not.
The Third Reich. No, I'm kidding. As a bad joke. No, he's no fan of Musk. He feels that Musk, and this might be some truth to some of these accusations, kind of free rides on a lot of top flight intellectual work that he hires people to do. It gets affiliated with his name, and he's the genius.
So he would have a problem with Thomas Ellis Edison?
Oh, right. Yeah, Reich totally would have had a problem with Edison. Oh, my God, yeah. He would have been textbook anti-Edison guy.
Mm-hmm.
For how he handled Tesla and all that. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think there's something to it. What Reich and others don't ever grant anybody is that there's maybe something to marketing a product.
Yes.
Creating a marketing product is just like, to them, poison. It's supposed to be. I don't know what. That's weird.
I was listening to a podcast and it was talking about, you know, some of the biggest lies ever in business. One of the biggest ones was, you know, if you make a product, you know, that everybody wants, you know, it'll just fly off the shelves. You know what I mean? If you make a product better than anyone else, it sells itself.
Yes, that's not true.
That's not true at all. I mean,
they'll say then, well, that means marketing is lying. Well, no. Marketing is outreach and communication. Are there some people who lie when they outreach others and communicate with others? Absolutely. Does that mean all marketing is lying? No, it doesn't. If you have the best product and you tell absolutely nobody but about it, then you're wondering where all your customers are. You did something wrong.
Right. I mean, I'm sure, you know, there's jingles or slogans that you heard when in the 70s and early 80s that you still remember to this day. And know what product it's affiliated with.
Yes. Absolutely. And if the product was entirely inferior, that jingle wouldn't have been enough.
No, there had to be something about the product other than just the jingle, right? Right.
And does that mean that it was, you know, the best? No. But it's that right mix. People have to know about your product. They have to be excited about buying it. When they buy it, they have to like it enough to buy it again. All these things need to be working in tandem. And
But you're not going to buy it if you don't know it about it.
Right. You have to know about it.
And you have to think it's a good idea. It's a good deal or it's a good idea.
You do, right. And sometimes that happens because something grabbed your attention in a way that might not have seemed entirely appropriate with the product. So if there's a funny plumbing ad, you might say, well, I don't need a funny plumber, but he got your attention.
Mm-hmm.
I have a septic company that on their side of their truck says we're number one in the number two business.
Mm-hmm.
Is that why I use them? No. But when they're driving down the road, I think that sticks out in people's heads. And they remember it.
Yeah, no, well, it might not be why you use it, but it might be why you remembered if you needed it.
Right. It sticks out in my mind. It's why they're this company in my head. It's got a little thing that's sticky. Versus, you know, I have to think back to remember who the name of my old company used to be.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's those little things. They're important because you're on a world of human beings. And human beings don't just say, what rational product do I need to buy today? That adorned plate is incurring 2 cents extra charge. I won't buy it with adornments. I'd rather the 2 cents. No, they want a design on the plate.
Mm-hmm.
So, that combination of stuff. But, yeah, right, to loop. Reich doesn't like Musk. Reich doesn't like Musk. Reich, for a guy who was Commerce Secretary, right?
Yeah.
Commerce Secretary seems kind of anti-business in a way that is above and beyond just sort of like, hey, we need to work out terms, which I think is valid, but
Secretary of Labor.
Labor, pardon me. Secretary of Labor. Yeah, everything was labor, like labor was the winner in everything. And a lot of labor's gains in the 50s and 60s have been cut back, so I'm not saying that there isn't anything to looking at the labor losses and maybe what they could regain again. But in Reich's head, again, he's one of the ones that I really don't see what they don't like about the USSR.
If
you were to say, okay, Reich, you don't like Stalin, right? And he'd be like, oh, I hate Stalin. Okay. But so that means you don't like the USSR. He's like, yep, yeah, I didn't like it. Terrible. Like, I don't buy it. I believe if you could take Stalin out and replace it with technology, like, oh yeah, they'll have, here's all this technology that they can have at their access. We'll give them the plans for it. They would take that system over our system.
So he likes China.
Well, they're not really the Soviets. No. China's a straight up authoritarian regime. And they allow businesses much more than the USSR did.
Right.
Like you can have a business. Like, it's maybe nominal and whatnot, and it's still one state-run power for sure. But I don't even necessarily mean that. I mean just the idea of the socialists.
I get you. The
Soviets, which were like little work, not little, like these large work groups,
mm-hmm.
they'll kind of manage production. So literally the means of production was handled by voting, by democracy, supposedly. Obviously it wasn't. Like, I wouldn't take that with a perfectly working democracy. Because it's not a market.
Mm-mm.
Like, there's no competition in it. It's just the person who gets the most votes. And then they make a decision on, okay, here's how many loaves of bread we need to allocate. And to quote, what's the mafia guy's name in Simpsons, in The Simpsons?
Oh.
Big Tony, I think.
Yeah, Big Tony, you're right.
And then it's like, and he's talking about, he's talking to Bart about, stealing stuff for your family.
Yes.
Like, is it wrong to steal a loaf of bread to feed your family? And Bart's like, no. He's like, well, what if your family don't like bread? What if they like cigarettes? So what if your family don't like bread? What if they want something else? What if they want meat? What if they want spaghetti? What if they want sauce? Well, the market has an answer for you. Everyone tries to make the product that they think people will want. People can go to the market and buy the product that they like. And the person that guessed right or marketed correctly or got the most people to come to them makes out. Mm-hmm. The ones who didn't, die in the street. No, I'm kidding. You know, they get it wrong. They either work for somebody else or they try again.
We were talking last week that, yeah. like, you know, there's many times when the superior product doesn't make it. And the lesser of the two, you know, wins the day.
Yeah, right. For whatever reason. Maybe it's a better product, but it's harder to manufacture. And people can't get it. And in the meantime, they buy the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
Or they get used to Microsoft Windows. they like Mac better, but you know Microsoft Windows is easier to get on more machines. And that's how Microsoft got to the position they were before Apple was like reborn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes it's not the best. Sometimes it was the most ubiquitous, and then you know the winning cycle just continued. I think the same thing happened with Cisco in the networking industry. There's other products out there, but Cisco is just so entrenched. It's the first name when people think.
Oh, and companies, you know, they'll spend $11 million on a firewall. Because they can't take the chance that the other, you know, competitor is going
right.
to do as good of a job.
Lower, I mean, there are other main competitors, even more expensive than Palo Alto.
Oh, Palo Alto, yeah.
Yeah, they're both extremely expensive than that. Are there cheaper firewalls out there? For sure. Do you want to justify to your shareholders that your billion-dollar company should be using a cheaper firewall?
I just put a Sidewinder in there. What are those things called? Sidewinder?
I think that's true. I think that's the right one. Yeah, the Sidewinder. Yeah. It might be better. I'm not going to tell you if it's better because I'm not going to try it. But it might be.
Yeah, they put a Raptor firewall in. He's like, what? How long did he keep a job there? You know?
Oh, he moved on. I saw that he's on LinkedIn. He's looking for an opportunity.
Checkpoint firewalls haven't really even gotten...
Oh, they're good firewalls.
They're good. I mean, what's the difference between the Checkpoint firewall today and the Palo Alto firewall?
When you're looking at it, it's not going to be what the product itself does. It's more the integration with the different technologies out there, management features, stuff like that. But yeah, the ASIC itself and it monitoring traffic and it, you know, and taking action. Yeah, it's not that much different. You're not getting a 5x performance off of a comparably priced product.
I'll tell you what, Palo Alto firewalls, I like them, but they're it's a different feel for a firewall to me.
Than Cisco?
Yeah.
Well, they are different than Cisco, for sure.
Well, no. I mean, like, just looking at the traffic and looking at the allows and denies.
Well, they stopped trying to be a regular firewall and just embraced being next gen. And that's like, okay, we're the firewall, we're the IPS, we're the proxy.
Mm-hmm.
We're this thing that does stuff at the edge. So do you want to enforce rules? Yeah, we can do it. Do you want us to look at categories? Yep. Do you want us to apply ML? Sure can. That's all way beyond what you bought a firewall for in the 90s.
Sure. Right. And they go in depth. I have to give them credit. They really go in depth for application layer. You know, SSL, TLS, SSL traffic is not, you know, is not equal anymore, right? It's what's in it with the, what, well, maybe that's a bad example, but you know, what's in the header of it, right? And what can be gleaned from the header before it's encapsulated or whatever, the tunnel. And, you know, it can be seen as different. Where is it headed? Right. So they can put companies, they can put, types of traffic on it, right?
Yep.
So they can, you know, categorize it based on that and identify it based on that. The problem I see with the Palo Altos is like, you know, they'll categorize something just on a whim. I mean, not on a whim, but I mean, they'll just put new categories out and all of a sudden your traffic is, you know, kaput. And because they categorize something, why it shouldn't. So. That happens. That seems to happen a lot.
So you feel that it has a lot of false positives.
It does have a lot of false positives, and not only does it have a lot of false positives, it's hard to get it to recategorize. I've spent time putting in, hey, you guys got this wrong, only to get a email back 5 seconds later saying, nope, we didn't.
No, you. How about instead of we got it wrong? Maybe you got it wrong.
You need to change the way you're looking at this traffic. And then so you have to call and open a ticket, and those don't just, you know, you have to wait a while for them to answer. And
right. And but I mean, I think that just goes, you know, to our earlier point. I mean, they are kind of known. They're like a high class or like a Cadillac in the firewall market right now.
Mm-hmm.
Have their faults. So should it be that they were instead taken over by a democratic regime that had a firewall committee that came up with how firewalls should be built, the rules firewalls should have on them, and how to deploy them? I could see that in play. I'd much prefer there be a market where people invest in the solution they think is going to be best. And you learn about results over a year's time or 2 years' time. Multiple different approaches, given a chance to succeed. And the succeeding one gets to tell a story in their marketing about how they did a good job.
Yep.
And the other ones lose customers. They can't rebuild their thing to be competitive, and they go out of the market. Or they can rebuild and redesign themselves and become competitive. Seems like a good system to me. Is it perfect? Where I see the imperfections to me is when finance enters into it. And to me, the companies become more about like the financial BS of valuations of what a company could be valued at, that they lose sight of, you know, selling a product.
Mm-hmm.
There's that Theranos story right now, you know, that's on TV. I think it's called The Dropout, and it's all about a female entrepreneur who claimed to have some cutting edge blood measurement, blood testing technology. It's all bunk. Well, to me, the market worked. She couldn't come to market, and she wasn't solvent.
Mm-hmm.
You could have snowed a committee And she kind of did because she found these investors. But in the end, the problem wasn't the market not working because it didn't, you know, products. It was not successful anymore. It was the finance end of them kind of conning people into lending the money to try and sell this thing. Now, people might say, well, how do you prevent that? Well, you have people invest their money in a product that's bad. Product fails. Then you talk about it. Mm-hmm. Well, and you tell people about it.
Right.
So a smart investor says, huh, next time they hear about a blood testing thing, maybe I shouldn't invest in that. Maybe that's bunk just like that Theranos was. And again, it's a market. What I think happens is we get so kind of divorced from what we're buying. We don't buy individual stocks. We buy in a mutual fund. What's a mutual fund buy? All the top performing stocks. I found out how they're performing. Well, you know, it's, you know, the people that know what's going on investing. Well, some of those people know what's going on and some are bad at it. So they come up with these huge indexes and some of the stocks on it are garbage and some are good. They figure it all equal out because we got a big enough set of stocks to buy.
Have you talked to, have you ever spoke to people that put mutual funds together?
I have.
Man, I mean, I don't know the people you talk to, but there's a lot that goes into it. I mean, it's not like...
There's a lot. Yep.
It's not just throwing darts at a dartboard and say, let's try this one. I mean, there's a lot.
I think even with all the math, to me, it's still a lot of augury. It's a lot of fortune telling. You have to assume that past performance does have an impact on the future.
Right, even though you say that it doesn't.
It doesn't. You kind of always have to think that. It's like Hume said about cause and effect. It's like, well, there's no proof that cause and effect is real. We just assume that it is. Right. You know, they'll say, well, you know, really can't assume past influences future. Yet we still look at yesterday's stock price to see what the stock is valued at.
Yeah.
You, no one says, you know, Apple should be worth one half as much as it is today. Everyone's like, okay, you're right. Hard to assess what a stock's worth. You know, you do look at
preferred. Yeah, but right. But there's not a lot of wiggle room where it's like, you know, the product either makes money for you or doesn't over the long
term. True. A lot with those index funds, I think you ever read one article, there's a number of zombie stocks that end up on index funds. You know what those are? Companies are no longer in business, but their stock is still trading.
Mm-hmm.
Those can end up on funds, and sometimes they'll justify it because the price was moving up. You don't own a rational product, but in the end, people don't want to own a rational product. They just want a product that's worth more in some way than what they paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
This makes the whole investing ultimately irrational because there's no underlying value.
So in the, we have some time. So I was watching another thing that, you know, that was talking about like how people invest money. Like if you want to invest, you know, poor people, they take money out and they put it in a house, they put it in a car. They put it in things that lose money, right?
Oh, housing doesn't lose money right now. Not these things.
It doesn't, no. But I'm saying, but...
Car immediately loses value.
They're more liabilities. Yeah, they can be liabilities.
Yes.
Where you, if you could borrow money and turn it into something that's going to make you money, right? Then that's far better, right? I mean, you'd rather borrow somebody else's money and make money from it than borrow somebody else's money and have them pay them back and, you know, and maybe not get anything from it.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously that's obviously, you know, the nose on your face, but it's just, you know, I haven't made such a deal.
Borrowing the money to open up a business is a lot more difficult than borrowing money to get a home loan.
Right, for sure. There's less people that are willing to lend you the money, with less on your side of the balance sheet.
Right.
And assets. Right, for sure.
And again, in a rational market, they don't want 2% interest. They want return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a lot of people, I think, in the United States get confused. Like, they get mad that interest rates get high because they wanted to borrow money more cheaply. But they're also upset that the bank doesn't give you any money in their saving accounts. That's right. One and the same thing.
Yes, it is.
The interest rate that they offer loans at is, with some overhead, the savings rate.
Mm-hmm.
They want to attract just enough. In an ideal market, you have just enough savers, just enough borrowers, and the borrowers are borrowing at the interest rate that entices the savers to save money with the bank.
Is it Dave Ramsey that talks about 12.5% interest, on your money? Was that him?
What did he say?
They can get like that if you. If you look hard enough, you can get, 12% interest on your money, depending on how much.
I don't know where you would find that at. Maybe, what does he mean with investments?
I think so. I have to look.
Certainly no bank is paying you 12% because the interest rate is just too low to justify 3 more percentage points on what they're ever going to lend anybody, or 9 more percentage points ahead of anything that they'd ever lend anybody.
Right.
Nope. People like the cheap cash and also don't like inflation. The Austrians will tell you that if you have cheap cash, you will have inflation.
Yes. Yes, you will. Now, how did the Austrians become like the premier of, capitalism? Oh, we got to go to a break. We'll be right back.
You will.
My gosh.
Brian Rouge Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations. Join me on the Brian Rouge Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
The pill has been taken. The blinders are off. Are we in the end game? Or are we simply living a replay of a time that's already happened? With no choices. Different people have different points of view. When it comes to creation versus evolution, my point of view, we were created to evolve. The Red Pill. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern in Studio B. www.freedomslips.com. at revolution.radio. Check it out.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern. On Studio B at freedomslips.com.
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
The original machine had a base plate of prefamulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two spurving bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fan. The lineup consisted simply of six hydrocoptic Marzal vanes, so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal lotus-o-deltoid type placed in panendermic semi-boloid slots of the stator, every seventh conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the grand meters.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, taking the confusion out of transmutated lunar girdle springs for 4 years and running. Revolution Radio, the number one listener-supported alternative media radio on the planet.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got now.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
And we're back.
And we're back. Thank you, everyone. So we're talking about economics and the Austrian School of Economics. The Austrian School was a group of economists like Karl Menger, I think, was the founding one. There was Ludwig von Mises later on. I think he was maybe 40 years later. Von Bock, I think, is another guy. Basically, they kind of introduced a lot of the groundwork for modern economics. And they fell out of favor because they really didn't like the model building, the overly mathematical take that they saw in a field that was too chaotic, because they kind of viewed it as an outgrowth of like human psychology. But there's a lot of core features in math or in any sort of economics these days, for as much as they kind of get derided, like marginal utility. You know, when you have like a Twinkie, that's worth, you know, $1 or 50 cents because you enjoy it, but you might not need 1,000,000 Twinkies.
Right.
So the 700,000th Twinkie isn't necessarily worth 50 cents to you again. I needed to buy $350,000 worth of Twinkies. That really kind of throws for a loop because you think, oh wow, what's that mean? It seems kind of obvious. A lot of like the Marxist stuff, the Marxist socialist stuff had to do with like fixed value. The value of something is what it sells for when you put into labor and materials. Suddenly it's not that anymore. It's a marginal value. Your first loaf of bread is worth $3, $4, $5, but you're not going to buy 20 loaves of bread. So there's all of a sudden discussion of like supply and demand and really basic economic rules. And Hayek said at the school that, you know, when all of the major premises become the founding, like just be absorbed in the mainstream, the school doesn't exist anymore. That's pretty much happened in the Austrian School of Economics. They never, and had a lot of iconoclasts who were very much against coming up with models for how the economy works because they didn't think they could be realistic. And if you see modern finance, it's all about those mathematical models.
A lot of double integrals, calculus.
Yeah, double integral calculus because they're trying to solve for all these different constraints. And they would say you're never going to be just able to really solve those in a way that's meaningful.
Supposedly, I don't know how you can do this. If you have a cost curve, right, and you take a derivative of that at any point,
yep,
you can get, how many tape recorders you should make, or
well, that's the idea. That's a basic one. That's just your regular derivative, right? So the idea is that there's a some perfect curve that you would have a way to solve the marginal utility of the next tape recorder that you're going to make.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there's this optimal, there's the supply and demand. And I think that's Marshall, right? I think that's the economist's name was Marshall who did that. And he drew the curve like wrong. I forget which side you reversed, but doesn't look like you'd expect it to look. I think it's like, it's reversed or it's like upside down or something weird. But yeah, the idea is there's some, perfect scale that if you knew, you could plot out if, people will buy 1,000 tape recorders if they're a dollar, or you'll sell 100,000 tape recorders if you're a dollar. You'll sell, 50,000 if they're $5.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll sell zero if they're 10. You sell enough to make the $5 amount.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because you make more money. Because if you sell 100,000 or $1, when you sell 50,000 or $5, you make $250,000.
Yeah, and where do you get this cost curve from anyway?
You don't. You have to just sell in the market. And that's what we were getting at earlier. It's funny for as much as Donald Trump himself came under scrutiny for it, there's a discussion of this on the show The Apprentice. And they're discussing where to put a price point at.
Mm-hmm.
And this one guy was picking this weird number, like 357. And he was saying, he was trying to talk out some like cost curve stuff like that. And this other guy was saying, people just don't buy things that cost $357. That's weird. Like human psychology wise, they buy things that are like $399.
Mm-hmm. Right. If you sell something for $357 and people buy it, you're wasting. You're not.
You probably could have sold it for $399.
Right. Exactly.
And that was this guy's point because they buy that's they don't. So these days it's not 99 anymore. It's 97, but it's like kind of hooked on that. It's like close, but not quite a dollar. But it's, you don't really see a lot of things for like, 982.
Now the one that does do that, the retail that was did that anyway before was Walmart, because they wanted to show that their prices were lower. They're going to be lower by a certain percentage, right?
So, well, then they would be basing it on something still.
You were exactly right, 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 right. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that it was 382 was catchy. It was that their competitor was selling over 389.
Right, and then they're coming in 5% cheaper or something like that.
Or, you know, maybe 5 cents cheaper, depending on what it is.
Or, yeah, for whatever. Right. Now, Walmart could do analysis that says, okay, because they're so big, they could do a little price experimentation, right?
And they do.
They could sell paper towels in Peoria for, you know, $5, $6, $4.
Mm-hmm.
And or change it. Maybe they don't want to be like compete stores against each other, but they'll change it week by week. And then they see how many paper towels people buy. So things in here that become important is like if a price is sticky. Gasoline, for instance, it's usually consumption, it's price invariant. Your consumption doesn't vary tremendously with price. Typically, you're driving where you have to drive. You might not do as much recreational driving, but if right. You gotta drive, you gotta drive.
Exactly. You don't say, I'm not going to work.
I'm not going to work anymore. Gas is too expensive.
Right.
Well, food's about to get very expensive for you too, because you're about to have no money.
Right.
Yeah, and versus like video games, we'll say. I mean, maybe people think video games are essential, but like AAA video games are really expensive video games. They're not going to be something that people need to buy. They might feel so because they've been motivated by marketing and whatnot. But in the end, you'll see a video game that debuts at $60, eventually sell for $5.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be the same video game. In fact, it'll be bigger because it'll include all the downloadable content and whatnot.
Oh, yeah. All
exclusives and whatever. So that will drop in price. You'll say, well, that didn't compete with the other games. Well, that's right. The value went down. Whereas tank gas is worth tank gas. Gets you to work. Gets your paycheck. So anyway, all these like insights that kind of seem obvious now are really kind of like founded in the economics field. Between there's a lot of Austrian influence. There's a lot of I think his name's Frank Marshall. He's an American, if I'm not mistaken, economist that kind of did some stuff with the price curves. And all these things coalesced into modern capitalist, really, economic theory, because their economic theory wasn't concerned with, like, social strata and stuff that, like, Marx is talking about. They're just talking about how people make money. And in the Marxist conception, it was kind of, everything was a rigged game. Now, certain people weren't able to, there would be these crises that happened because there was these fixed cost investments that influenced future profits. And that was, his math was way wrong because a bunch of people pointed out the future profit part negated his prior part of the equation. But he was supposed to go work that out later. Mm-hmm. He never actually did.
Right.
And that's where the modern, one of the interests of one of the books that kind of took Marx down said any of the major economists writing at the time could have written this book. Somebody had to, so it was this, I think it's Bonwerk or whatever, Verk. But it basically just took apart his bad math.
Right.
And that bad math kind of did underpin a lot of his argumentation. And the take was, well, if the math's bad, you can throw everything else about it with Marx. And a lot of people, that's efficient. I really do kind of see that argument. You can talk about all you like about your social theory, but in the end, he was predicting a ultimate downfall of capitalism based on math that was wrong.
Right.
And I think that's important. Mm-hmm. Speaking of mass that we want to be right, please consider supporting revolution.radio/donationshtml, patreon.com/revolutionradio, donorbox.org /revolution-radio, and zazzle.com/store/revradio. All of these means of supporting our radio station allow us to stay on the air along with many other hosts here. I certainly hope you do stop by.
We do. Have you ever heard of Retail Link?
I have. I have heard of Retail Link.
I helped secure Retail Link when I worked for Walmart.
Oh, cool.
It was one of my jobs. I did a good job at it, too. Which we can't talk about. But we can talk about Retail Link and what it does. It actually kind of helps. It offloads some of the cost of putting goods on the shelves to the vendors. And then it kind of incentivizes them to keep the shelves full, you know.
Yeah, this kind of gets into something interesting, too, because it's not really how you conceive of a store. A lot of times you think, well, Walmart is buying a product and then, in turn, selling it. That's kind of not how the Walmart relationship works with these vendors. Like you're saying, they encourage the vendors to stock it. They kind of give space. Isn't that how it works?
They do. They do. And you'll see, you'll see the Coke guy come in and stock the shelves,
And the Coke guy's job, not Walmart's.
Right. Make sure your products, you make sure your product's here. You make sure it looks good. You make sure the everything is where it's supposed to be. You know?
Right.
Yeah. You make sure that, I've seen the Hallmark gift card lady, at the Walmart, and he's like, do you have this? No, I'm sorry. I don't work here. I'm just stocking the shelves.
Right. I can stock and I can leave.
Yes.
I can't ring you up. I'm sorry. And I don't know the manager.
All right. I can't call for somebody. I can't do a price check for you. Yeah. Go ahead. You were saying.
No, just that kind of gets into the modern relationship that I think people don't necessarily think about. They're like, well, Walmart makes all this money. Well, Walmart makes all this money because they're very good at getting their name out there. And in turn, vendors come to them to sell their product.
Yes. Oh, yes. I mean, and look at Walmart locations. Sam Walton, he wasn't out to put Walmarts in the premier locations. Location, location, location was not Sam's forefront on his mind. It was cheap real estate. Cheap real estate, cheap real estate.
Oh, it's location, 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 in the sense that he wanted as many locations as he could have.
That's
not
true.
The prime location necessarily, but right. he wanted a wide footprint because he was making it. He was selling on volume.
Yes, yes. He did what Disney did. They'd go in and they'd have shell companies like buy property. So that
you wouldn't know who it was.
You're right. Cause if you knew Walmart was buying the property, well then, you'd raise it 10 times the price or, a large percentage. So you made more money on the property. So he'd go scout it out and then have somebody else buy it. And did you know that he flew a plane? Sam Walton did.
No, I did not.
And so when he was going to look for stores, he would pilot a plane, his own plane. He'd fly it around looking for good places to build a Walmart. Looking at roads and, places, and he'd plop the plane down and, take a look at it. He was only slightly better pilot than he was a driver, they say. So, and he wasn't that good of a driver.
No, I didn't know that. That's pretty cool. And he flew his own plane. Did he have a co-pilot with him?
I don't know. I don't know that he did or not. I mean, pretty
for guys not great at flying to fly solo.
Yeah, I don't know that he did. I don't know. I mean, you don't hear it in the stories. It's not about the co-pilot. right. But like he would just tell, I mean, he would tell people of his staff, you know, get to the plane. We're going to go somewhere and look, you know, and they're like, okay, you know, and then, sure. and then it'll, you know, I've heard stories, you know, well, cause I work there, like they'd work all day for, you know, they'd work all day and he'd be like, oh, let's, you know, it's time to eat, Mr. Sam. And then he's like, yeah. There's a Wendy's like quarter mile down the road. Let's go there. You know, not, you know, there's a steak. Let's have a steak dinner.
Sure.
So anyway, I think he had a great vision and I think he was a great businessman. And I think that, pretty much they, you know, he's rolling over in his grave many times an hour, for what they did to the company. But that's just me.
So what do you think doesn't match their vision today? What is it Walmart doing that Sam Walton did?
Well, he got a lot of flack for not having Made in America products. So he did things to make sure that more products were made in the USA. He wanted more products made in the USA. He bought companies so that he could make his products and have them in the USA. There was a lot of Made in the USA products and he was very proud of that and he wanted to grow that. That was one of the things, you know, as soon as he passed away, that was like item one that they changed. You know, they played a lot of lip service to, they paid a lot of lip service to what he said, but then, you know, right after he passed away, they made a lot of changes.
So, to be fair, though, is he more committed to Made in the USA or is he more committed to the lower price?
Yeah, I mean, I understand. I understand where you're
going. I mean, because I certainly think he delivers on... like cost.
Being the cost leader, yeah.
Yeah.
But there was other ways that he, so everyday low prices, right? Was what he strove for. But that was built on everyday low cost. Because, you know, he did things to make sure that his costs were lower than his competitors too, right?
Yeah, but like, I mean, so, like, clothing, say. Are there really that many, like, U.S. clothing manufacturers that are going to sell at any sort of rate that are going to compete with what you're going to get from overseas?
No.
So I don't know. I mean, I can see what you're saying. But in the end, I just think the American consumer does want to buy... really cheap products, but I mean, in terms of expense, they certainly want it to be value, like of a good value. But in the end, they don't want to pay $75 for stuff that they're going to wear. The Walmart.
Yeah, true. No, I get, but that was one thing he was big on, and towards, you know, and maybe it was a model that was failing. It would have failed him, right, long term, because it's hard to have the best prices and have, you know, a lot of American made goods in the United States. It's those two kind of fly in the face of each other, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm saying. They just seem antithetical to each other. Like, how do you do that? I mean, just the American labor cost is so high.
Yeah.
And that's as much a function as where they live as anything else. They live in locations that are very expensive to live in.
I know that, you know, he was in every part of the business. He had cost savings in every portion of the business, and he had innovative ways to cut costs in every portion of the business. Like, for instance, he did the math, and he had to have the distribution centers. He had to own the trucking. You know, he couldn't have another company do the distribution for him and drive the trucks. That was a losing, there was more savings in owning the line yourself.
Right. Yeah. So whatever you saved in the short term, you made up, or lost in the short term, you made up in the long term.
Right. So they put a lot of investment into placements of distribution centers and trucking, trucking and trucking lines, right? That he could have, J.B. Hunt, company right there down the street, he could have used J.B. Hunt to drive all his freight around, but he didn't, right? And so that was a big win. You know, it's still, you know, Target doesn't have their own trucking company.
Right.
To this day. So that's one thing, right? He was big on mechanization, mechanized distribution centers, where boxes kind of,
Well, they haven't gotten away from that, right?
They haven't, no.
So the cutting down on, what they would see as unnecessary labor, I think that's been a strong driving Walmart principle. And it's done in a way that's designed to keep cost down as much as, it's a profitable company, but it's as much designed to keep the cost down for the consumers as anything else. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I guess I could see what you're saying. I think there's, it's complicated. I think they hold their own against Target, and Target has always branded themselves as something that was like many cuts above Walmart.
Right. You Target fashions themselves as
they're just better. You go here because you're a better, you're a superior person. You're higher up in social status. You're better because you shop at Target.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's so warranted by the products there. That you got your Doritos at Target and not at
Walmart. Yeah. No, I know. Or, is our Chinese made stuff at Target better than their Chinese made stuff at Walmart,
No, I mean, some of it, I think Target will have a better just quality of stuff.
Yeah.
Your higher thread count stuff. And maybe there's not as much of that at Walmart. But in the end, to your point, a lot of it's disposable clothing. And yeah, I don't know that you're getting so much more for your value at Target versus Walmart with the t-shirts you buy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No.
Well, I think we talked about it before. Did you see that one Onion sketch they talked about, the Walmart shooter?
No, I don't think so.
That sounds grave, but the idea is there's someone who's holding hostages at a Walmart, and all of the people there all act like they have no idea of anything about Walmart. They'll say that this person was in the electronics section. I guess they sell electronics there. I wouldn't know. I don't shop there. And then the anchor's like, yeah, me neither. And they're being real offhand, like, oh yeah, I guess they sold it there. I don't know, me either. They don't shop there, and they have to get that across.
Yes, they have to
really emphasize that.
It's the McDonald's of the clothiers, right?
Right. And even the Walmart shooter wanted to be known as the box store shooter, not the Walmart shooter. And it just goes to show you how much of purchasing, you know, we were talking earlier about marketing and whatnot, comes down to all that social stuff that isn't really influenced by, you know, just the quality of the product and the price you're paying.
Yeah, I mean, there's the People of Walmart website, right? Of course,
that's not used in an endearing way.
No. And I think some of it is actually, you know, people that are trying to take down Walmart. But there's not a People of
Park. Oh, for sure. They absolutely are. They're very much against Walmart. But they all seem to, like, end up there at some point.
Right.
Well, even if it's to buy, like, soda or napkins.
I just looked it up. There's no People of Target website.
There's no People of Target website?
No, that showing people that, you know, that dress in, you know, clothing that you shouldn't wear at home by yourself, you know.
Right. Yeah, I noticed we were at a Walmart and Target over the weekend, and there was definitely more fashion conscious individuals at the Target than there were at the Walmart.
I could see that.
They were definitely wearing stuff. And this is the younger set, right? They're wearing stuff that was more, like put together and whatnot. And I think that just goes to show that the average person there is going to Target for more than just, yeah, I gotta buy socks.
Right. That's true.
I think where the Target space is they're kind of the new, from back in the day, like Sears, JCPenney. I wouldn't go as far as saying Macy's because they've never been that upend. They like to carve out a space that's like they just want their customers a step above, a step better, and they like to cultivate that. I just want to take one break, though, and say if you enjoy our show and other people's shows here, please consider donating to Revolution Radio at one of our fine websites, revolution.radio/donations.html, patreon.com/revolutionradio, donorbox.org/revolution-radio, and the Zazzle store, zazzle.com/store/revradio. Yeah, that's the, was it Veblen? There was another economist that talked about how people are motivated to purchase by status as much as anything else. He gave idea of the keeping up with the Joneses. You don't want to be seen as one of the lesser, one of the lower. So you got to buy this kind of thing, this certain brand of this, the certain brand of that. Else you'll be an outcast socially.
Yeah, see, you have to have the who's in watch, right? Did I say that?
Yep.
Or, you know, the Beamer, the BMW car, or the Jaguar.
Got to get that Jag, the Beamer. These days, I think it's the Tesla.
I do see a good amount of Teslas anymore. And I just keep looking at them and I'm like, are they almost out of battery? Are they gonna just kaput, just go bad at the end of the, you know, is this gonna die right here on the road?
What happens when they run out of battery? It gets towed somewhere by a gas car and to a place that's got a charging station, I guess.
Yeah.
You
seen that meme, haven't you? It was the, a gas powered generator charging a Tesla or something, right?
No, that's pretty funny, though. Yeah, we're talking about that at work today just because we got some Tesla owners, and they're very fixated on the a charging increment. It's done in miles per hour.
Miles per hour, okay. And usually, that's usually meant for speed.
Right. And it like puzzled me, because they're like, yeah, I was charging 40 miles an hour, but I went to the DC charger, it's charging at 1,000 miles per hour. And I'm like, is that this, but electrons don't have like variable speed, like.
They move at the speed, near speed of light.
Speed of light, is it the, why would the transmission cable be, there'd be loss?
Right.
Slower? No. What they mean is, it's just the rate. It's a higher gauge wrapped cord or steel or whatever that's transmitting this stuff to them. It's because it's DC current. And, it's how much their car can travel at the end of the hour of being charged.
Oh, miles per hour.
Miles per hour. But they say in a way, charging at miles per hour, that it makes you think it has something to do with the transmission of the electrons into their battery. Or the chemical reaction within the battery to store the energy from the electrons, we'll say.
I see.
But yeah, it's pretty wild, because I mean, it's charging 1,000 miles per hour. I was really trying to think about, like, what is happening? They have to measure speed. Right.
Yeah, but
it's electrons, they're always moving the same. But yeah, it's the idea is it's a higher capacity transmission line.
Wow.
So you're doing 220. And it's able to adjust that, and then their battery in turn can go, they charge it for half an hour and it's charging at 1,000 miles per hour, or 15 minutes, like, because they don't have their battery storage isn't like that great. So if you're charging 1,000 miles per hour, you've got a 240 mile range for your car. In 15 minutes, you can hit the max range of your car from like empty.
15 minutes, huh?
Huh, yeah. Now, it's one of these high capacity charging stations.
Is that what Biden's putting out there?
They're higher capacity. The highest capacity are only on Teslas. And, you know, good King Musk, Elon, hasn't made that particular thing open source.
It's still proprietary.
It's still proprietary.
So if you're driving a Leaf or something like that.
Yeah, the Leaf, I don't think gets access to it.
So it has to charge it 40 miles per hour. Or,
right, or the higher capacity ones are not 1,000 miles per hour for sure.
Now, yeah, what is the total miles per hour? I mean, how many miles can you get out of a?
I think it's like 240, 250. Mm-hmm. But as they're saying, like. Because it uses more energy as, like, it goes up hills, because everything does.
Right.
It's just, it's doing more work, ergo it uses more energy. So if you're driving through West Virginia, it's very hilly, you might get 120 miles.
Mm-hmm.
That 200 plus is when you're on, like, flat land. You're out in, like, in Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Man, what about air conditioning? I mean, how do you, I feel like I'd get 50 miles per gallon because I'd have to have the air conditioning crank. And...
Yeah, that is an interesting one. And, you know, even for that matter, a heater, right?
Sure.
You drop down to like 10 degrees.
Right.
Even that car one's going to take up some energy.
Yeah, right.
That battery would just, I would think, go down pretty darn quick.
Because it's a short.
Right, yeah, right. It's got to transmit everything as heat. It's a very costly.
And you're not getting the heat from the engine. You're not getting
the air. There's no heat from the engine that they can just, like, point towards the cabin with a fan.
Right.
So you don't have that. It's just a if you drop low enough, you can't use any of the whiz bang magic of the modern high efficiency AC unit. You just go right to the heat pump heat. or the auxiliary heating on the heat pump, and that's just, it's just like a radiator. It just makes the metal really hot and blows at you. So yeah, the efficiency there when it comes to winter, I think would, drop drastically. Now then you're getting down into climate, but, all this to me is why I think there will never be any, well, maybe not never, but I'm not expecting within our lifetime to be on 100% electric vehicles.
Oh, definitely not by 2040.
No, no.
And I hope that's within my lifetime.
Well, I get all the dates wrong these days. I think it's 2040 is the target for
GM.
50% of, well, no, this is like a national thing, like Biden's pushing. Maybe it's 2035, if I forget. There's 50% of the cars sold have some major electric storage component for driving. Not just it's got a battery and then you can really crank your subwoofer. But they're at least hybrid.
I rented a Toyota Sienna van. You've seen those?
It's a mini, right? Minivan?
Yeah. Seven passenger minivan. It was a hybrid. Rented it for the week. And I kept it on eco setting. It was reminiscent of driving my 1984 Plymouth Voyager. The power with it, you know.
And for those listening at home, when he says the power, he means the lack of.
It was like, yeah, it's like driving a, a light rail streetcar, you know, like either had the pedal all the way down or you didn't.
Right.
There's two settings. I calculated it. It got 33 miles to the gallon, you know, driving it around town and driving it, you know, to work and back and driving it through the city. That was pretty good. You know, I don't know if the total cost of ownership over time would be worth it. When there's batteries.
Well, where that would get complicated and where it would become more essential for someone to buy it, if there was any sort of, right wing take on the left that, you know, oh, we better watch out for. The one thing I think I'd give a lot of credence to is the idea that there'd be want a carbon market, the carbon trading and carbon credits and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And two, that would extend into the consumer space, at least for like cars and housing heat.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if at some point, and if not mine, my children's future, there's a, you know, we do the emissions test now.
Mm-hmm.
That has a carbon component to it. Which had an associated tax involved.
Yes, different from the mileage tax.
No, I think there's some mileage tax. You know, taxes don't tend to go away. So yeah, with a mileage tax still in place, there'd be an additional carbon tax.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Joe's Tesla will get a certain amount of tax and he's driving around a lot. So that's wear and tear on the roads, but it's not releasing anything into the atmosphere, anything additional. So it doesn't pay that carbon tax. Sally's, all gas vehicle, may not have driven as far, may have done less damage on the road, but used more gas because the Tesla used 0 gallons. She would get her mileage check, pay the mileage tax, and say, ah, well, the average, we plugged a, you know, we, you know, put the little thing on the edge of your car. We notice there's this much emissions in this space of time. We calculate the better driving. That means you put X number of amount of, carbon dioxide into the, in the atmosphere. Well, we're charging it for it. And we're going to supposedly plant a tree with that money. Give us.
So two things though. Two things kind of dovetailing off what you're saying. If you go to these charging stations, they're free right now, right? It's free to charge your car.
Yep.
Do you think they're going to remain free?
No, I don't.
I don't either.
I think they're being subsidized right now. At a certain point, they're being subsidized because it's, you know, trying to get the, trying to sell the monorail. Sorry.
Yes.
That's another sense.
But Main Street's still all cracked and broken.
Sorry, Mom. The mob has spoken. Anyway, yeah. So they try to get the people on board. And the idea is that it's free. Because why would you have to pay to charge a battery?
Yeah, I know. I mean, why can't I run my house on batteries? You know, it's like, I'm not running, I'm not using electricity. I'm just charging this battery and then I'm running my house off that battery. So it's free.
So it's just free energy.
Yeah. At the power plant, when it's sending the line, it's sending electricity to the lines, the transmission lines to get to my house, if it's for a car battery, it's for a Tesla, it doesn't pollute. We're at the factory.
Because the only cost that a factory incurs is pollution. Yeah. Not maintenance, not upgrades, not fixing stuff. Just that it does it put greenhouse gas in the atmosphere. That's it.
That's it. That's their curve. Their
don't have to fix, never have to fix a windmill. They're good for forever. Windmill blades never need replacing. Certainly don't end up burning a landfill.
Because you can't do anything else with them.
Because you can't do anything with them because you can't recycle them because they're too big. Yeah, certainly you don't get buried on us. Just people might not listen to us. We referred to an earlier episode where they in fact do bury windmill blades. Because once they go bad, they're useless. And they do go bad. They break for any number of reasons. So yeah, just like anything else, there's no perpetual motion machine. And, yeah, it's just a matter of finding the most pragmatic cost. Does that mean that, Ed and I differ on our takes on global warming. I think it's a serious enough problem. We should deal with it. I don't think that means we should, you know, live in caves, which incidentally is bad for the environment. Because you end up burning stuff.
It's bad for your health, too.
Bad for your health. Yeah. You burn stuff in the cave and get carbon dioxide. That's not great at all. So you very much need a modern system to deal with it. Where Ed and I are aligned very tightly is how you would solve a problem like this. You'd pick the best energy sources. What are the two best energy sources right now, Ed?
Let's see. Nuclear.
There.
And I have to pick another?
Yeah, pick two.
Oh, natural gas?
Natural gas, right. Cleanest burning for the energy output. Now, does that mean gasoline is the worst? Gasoline's great. It has a high pollution rate versus maybe natural gas in the zero that's in nuclear.
All right.
But wow, what can you get for a tank of gas is pretty amazing when you think about it.
Well, of course. And cars could get a lot more, gasoline engines can get a lot more miles per gallon if you took off the catalytic converter, the muffler.
Oh, yeah, right. Sure. Absolutely. If it was just output, yeah, you don't have to have a catalytic converter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh, my God. Yeah, you don't have to muffle the noise anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly.
Yeah, if it's just output, no. It's, there'd be, you wouldn't ever, the Tesla would never touch it.
Mm-mm.
You're never going to see a Tesla enter and win NASCAR races.
That's right.
Which are nominally stock car races.
But they get much faster, Aaron.
Yeah, that's weird, huh?
Yeah,
he's, my car actually, that's not the Toyota Camry. Like, can I get a car that fast? Well, not really.
Welcome to the Tesla 25. What Tesla driver can make it around the track in 25 laps?
right, exactly. Okay, he's going to be sitting out for the next 15 minutes. Charging at 1,000 miles per hour, so look out, kids.
Look at that pit crew work.
Look at them work.
He pulls in, they plug it in.
And just wait. Change tires.
Wash it. Yeah.
Watch. They actually get the driver out of the car. He's like, walks around, stretches out a little bit. I mean, he's finishing 54th, so why not? Yeah. Just take your time. Is this the day that every other car crashes except the Tesla? They can allow the Tesla to race into the first place. We'll see. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Yeah, the Tesla owners, I think very much like being on the cutting edge. And it is cutting edge in a certain way. But man, they don't ever get to call themselves the fastest.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's going to be some innovations that come out of hybrid stuff that will probably make sense at some point.
Yeah.
It's not a bad idea, right?
It's not. I like, you know, I'm glad that hybrids got better than the Prius. I mean, in size, right? I mean,
they're finding. So, like, if you're trying to invent like a system, like if you have the whole space of possible design, and you're trying to maximize for a number of different things to include fuel efficiency. You want to have the hybrid solution set on the table.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea, especially driving around town, of like using your battery, if it's recycling and storing energy, and not tapping your gas tank as much when you're driving in between like stop signs.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bad idea.
Mm-mm.
It's garbage on the highway, but you're not trying to solve for highway. And it's not your best solution for speed, but for most people, they don't really care.
Right. Right.
Do you, as it's 11:52, as we was in entertaining conspiracy theories, one that I think has been kicked around a little bit, I've seen it mentioned here and there. Is it your opinion that Biden, or maybe not necessarily Biden, but people within his cadre of advisors and whatnot, want gas prices to be high in order to better sell the need for electric cars?
I don't know that that's the case. I don't know that I believe that.
I would say that they're not in control, but they're happy about the outcome.
There you go. That's what I would go with that too. Yeah.
Like I don't think they're like, we're doing, like, they're not like maniacally laughing. Oh, we could turn the knob and widget the widget that would make gas prices drop to $1.50 a gallon, but we're not going to do it.
Yeah. No.
I think if Trump were in office, he'd be facing similar gas prices. He might be able to knock off a quarter. They're not knocking down $2.
Well, on the other side, you know, I'm also not for, you know, using up the our reserves either.
Well, you don't want to use them up for this.
No, I don't.
Yeah, like to me, reserves are like national emergency.
Yeah, right. I don't.
Like, there's no gas. Like when the gas station's closed, like, well, how much is gas? That you're not understanding me. We don't have gas. Right. Like when you're in the, Road Warrior times, when, you know, Lord Humongous is showing up saying, you know, just walk away at the petrol pumping station.
Yeah. I don't think it's helping the price that much either.
I don't think it helps the price any. I think there's a lot of, just, you know, it's a way to beat up on Biden. Oh, we need to release the reserves. Like, it's not a good time to release reserves. But we'll talk about the tax holiday, you know, I think he's being forced into that, and that's probably helpful. Change around the ethanol rule. But yeah, in the end, we're in a tough market situation right now for gas. And I just don't think the president of the United States, as powerful as that position can be, really can do anything about it. You'll hear Robert Reich. His answer is they're price gouging.
Who's the price gouger?
The oil companies, yeah. Because they're
so all of a sudden they're making more per gallon of gas than they did yesterday.
They're selling at a higher rate, which is allowing them to do things like stock buybacks. That's his big indicator. If they're doing a stock buyback, it's because there's excessive profit taking.
All right, wait. In the last minute and a half here, but
right away.
Is this not the same? Are they not at the same price point? I mean, they're still only making 9 cents a gallon, whether it's $5.
They're making no. His claim is they're making more.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
I would have to see price of raw, price of refinement, and end price mapped out by like an ace analyst for me to buy it.
Yeah.
His only take is gas price is high. They're doing stock buybacks. Ergo, they've got excessive profits. I agree. I think I need to see more, but that's his take.
That's a little too conspiracy for me.
It's very conspiracy. It's the other side of the conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
It's to the Joe Biden people that are saying, well, he's manipulating price. He's saying effectively the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's no drive. There's no actual uptick in consumption. It's just the oil companies driving up the price. Hard to believe.
It is hard to believe.
It's also hard to believe that we're at the end of the hour.
It is. 2 hours have gone by, I think, rather quickly.
It has gone by very quickly. It's always enjoyable to talk in. Always love the fact that we've got listeners here listening in on our conversations. Again, if you enjoy our program, please consider supporting us at revolution.radio/donations on HTML, patreon.com/revolutionradio, donorbox.org/revolution-radio, and the Zazzle store, zazzle.com/store/revradio. Thanks again.
See you next time.
Radio.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We've got to stop them. They're going to kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well, now you've got it.
Right. You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution.
travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time across the dimension.